On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour with John Fain.
We're going to enjoy the adventures of Bob Hall on The Conversation Hour today. A double-decker bus called Hairy Pillock was driven by a bunch of, well, they were probably hippies, I'd say, back in the old days, right around the world with various gaps in between. There's a fabulous film that's part of the Adventure Travel Film Festival coming your way, and Bob's going to tell us all about it, together with novelist Christos Tsolkas, together with historian Andrew May, who have completed an arts residency. And if you don't know what an arts residency is and what people do in one, well, neither do I, and I'm looking forward to learning when they join us shortly. For her sins on her birthday, my co-host is adventurer Shirley Hardy-Ricks. Together with husband Brian, they've done all sorts of motorcycle rides from exotic places, from London to Melbourne, across Russia, from top to bottom of the Americas, all sorts of things, different books that have been published, Two for the Road and Circle to Circle. Shirley, welcome back.
Thanks, John. It's a nice way to spend my birthday.
You undoubtedly have got other highlights of the day to look forward to.
At this stage, no, but I'm sure something will come up.
Surprises?
I doubt it.
No?
I'm a bit past birthday surprises, I think.
Oh, what about, you know, the sort of champagne, roses, chocolates, massage voucher, all that sort of stuff?
You know Brian.
Doesn't that go well?
No, I'm more likely to get a map of Africa.
Is he taking notes? Oh, there's a romantic buried in there somewhere. Are you moving house?
We are. We're going to the country. We're making a tree change.
Oh.
Yeah, we're not going to the sea. We're going into the bush.
After how many years in the one house?
Only 11 in this one. Yeah, but when...
Upheaval?
Look, it has been incredibly stressful, but we sold it in 4 days, so I was pretty happy about that.
Obviously, weren't asking enough.
Yeah, maybe we weren't. That was our mistake. But when the agent came and looked at it and he said, well, you'll need to declutter. So 10 cubic metres of my treasured possessions have gone into storage already. So,
how much is 10 cubic metres?
Half a garage.
Yeah, okay.
Single car garage. So a lot.
What sort of clutter are we talking
about?
Well,
we had too much furniture. We had two big chairs that you like to curl up in and read books. You're only allowed to have one of those.
Oh, is that right?
And
is that
the rules? We had a couch in the man cave, and we had to convert the man cave back into an office and convert what had been an office back into a bedroom.
Okay, in order to make it look as if it was the sort of house that a family might want to buy.
That's right, and a family has bought it, so
that's nice.
It's not going to be pulled down and turned into units, and it's one of the rarities in our suburb not to get pulled down.
Is it traumatic, the process of uprooting yourselves after 11 years?
I'm so looking forward to the move now. I just wish we could get there. The thought of packing up the house is becoming a bit of a trauma, and I know that I keep saying to myself I've got 6 or 8 weeks to do it, and in the last fortnight I'll be, oh, do you think we should start now? We've got a lot of boxes ready to go.
Yes.
But because you've got that 10 cubic metres already packed up, you think, well, I've started.
Yeah.
So it's okay.
Are you getting rid of stuff or just storing it?
Oh, no, we have got rid of, we've had one hard rubbish clean out and there'll be another one.
Oh, no.
Yeah, nothing.
Garage sale?
No. Anything that was worth minuscule amounts of money, I'm just as happy to give it to the charity shop as to stand in our garage on a Saturday and be demoralised as someone goes through what I think is quite a pleasant piece of kit and have them offer me 50 cents for it.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of fun.
I'm not a garage.
Look, if you want that old camera, then you can have it for a dollar if you take the trampoline as well.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that sort of negotiation.
Yeah.
We gave the old cameras to the guy who's going to help us take some of the plants out of the garden.
Oh.
I'm not sure you meant to say that, though.
Plants out of the garden.
In pots, maybe. Oops. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
But you'll be putting other plants in.
Oh, absolutely. We're
because you're just particularly fond of that particular one, but there will be something there to replace
Well, we actually have a very treasured rose, the Angela Taylor rose.
Oh, okay.
That was named in honour of the young policewoman who was killed at Russell Street bombing. So Angela Taylor rose will be coming with us.
And you can just pop us another rose in.
We will put something else into the garden.
Not be an Angela Taylor, but someone else will be just as happy with it, perhaps.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm sure, yes. Yeah. I once, when I was lawyering, had a dispute where some people bought a house, and when they went, you know, you do an inspection before settlement,
mm-hmm.
and then you say, yep, everything's in order, and then you go back to the lawyer's office and you hand over your money.
Is that what you do?
Yeah, you hand over the money, and then they give you the keys and the title in exchange for your money. And the bank's usually there as well, because most people are buying with a bank. And so everyone swaps their little envelopes and ticks off everything's done proper. And then with the keys in your hand, you go back to what's now your house, which only maybe a few hours before you'd inspected.
There's something terrible's happening here.
Guess what?
What was gone?
In the meantime, the dishwasher was removed. Light switches and power points.
Why would you
the
take
the overhead
that?
Fan, you know, what are they called, above the stove? What's that called?
The
range
fan.
Hood. Yeah, range hood.
Gone.
Unbelievable. And so we had to threaten all sorts of things off to court and counting up the damage. People are just crazy.
But that's their classed as fixtures.
That, exactly. Just like plants in the garden, Shirley.
Oh, okay. Thanks, John.
If you dig them up, they're
I will
a fixture.
Replace them. I will definitely
pot plants,
replace them.
No, you can take your pot plants.
Oh, yes. Well, pot plants will come with us. Yeah. But, gee, why would you take the light switches anyway?
Because you're a lunatic.
Must
and you think
be.
You're going to get away with it. And you're mean and narrow, small-minded and you have no regard for other people. And I can keep on going, but yeah, you just can't treat people like that and get away with it.
No, that really is mean.
It is.
It's
crazy.
So stupid. What I can't work out is why you would even want those light switches.
No. But given that you're selling your house, you're also
buying the same day.
Right.
So we're going to be with the truck revving in the driveway of our suburban house. As somewhere in Melbourne, our conveyancer is doing all of the things that you say need to be done, so that by the time we get to the country,
they ring up and go, "Yep, everything's okay."
There will be keys for us.
You think
we'll already be packed up?
And are they moving out in the country at the same time?
I believe not. They already have another property, so I'm hoping they'll move before, so we don't have a clog jam of.
Well, it's dominoes.
Yeah.
If one goes wrong, the whole thing just falls over.
Yeah. So the young couple that have bought our house will probably be sitting in the driveway with their truck to move in as we're reversing out with our truck to move out on our way to the bush.
And everything has to work with absolute precision.
Indeed. And not only are we shifting what we've been told by the removalists is a 16-ton truck worth of stuff, we've got our...
A 16-ton. Yeah. Is that like a very big truck?
I believe so.
You've got too much stuff.
I believe so. Yeah. And we also have to take our 12-year-old dog, and we've just taken on a rescue cat. So one of us will have a fairly highly strung rescue cat in a box in a car for however long it takes to get things unloaded and settled.
And relocating the cat to the new property?
Yes.
So what's the trick there to stop the cat running away and turning up back at your old house?
They say to put butter on their paws.
Do you think that works?
I don't think so. I'm just going to keep him locked inside for a week or two until he knows that that's his furniture and his house. And
you have to feed them and feed them and feed them,
yeah,
don't you?
You can't get away with not feeding this cat. He's a Manx cat. And
Manx.
I've never known a cat with such a loud voice.
From the Isle of Man.
Yeah. So he's named Joey, John, after Joey Dunlop.
Joey Dunlop.
The
motorcycle
Isle of Man
rider.
Motorcycle
Isle of Man
race.
TT.
Correct.
The wildest motorcycle race of all.
Correct.
Ah, okay.
That was the condition if we got a Manx cat that Brian said he had to be called Joey.
You've been to the Isle of Man.
We have. We've ridden around the track on Mad Sunday for our sins.
I've been to the Isle of Man.
Did you ride around the track?
Because that's where my wife's family come from.
It's the most beautiful place.
She's a Manx. She's my Manx minx.
Manx minx?
Do you know how much trouble I'm going to be in for saying that on the radio?
Yeah, I think lots. And so you should be.
So, yeah, her father's family are from the Isle of Man.
It's a lovely place. Mm. And one good thing about Motorcycle Week is they only race every second day. Mm. So on the alternate days, you can actually go and visit all the beautiful places and wander along the beach at up near the lighthouse and along the beachfront at Douglas. And it's
kind
a really fun place.
Kind of weird place.
Yeah, it is weird. When we were there, I was down at the tourist office and I was saying to the ladies, it must be really hard for them the week when all the motorcyclists are here. And she went, no, next week's the hard week. The lawn bowlers arrive.
Fantastic museum in Douglas on the history of the Isle of Man.
We didn't get to the museum.
Because it's a tax haven and it also has Flag of Convenience shipping based there because it's a tax haven, a lot of insurance companies based there, it's very well to do. As a community compared to Ireland or Scotland or Wales. And they have they put a lot of money into their museum. I highly recommend it. So now you have to go back.
Well, we're actually thinking about going back in 2018 for the 100th running of the TT. So
Oh, is it coming up?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not actually the centenary. That's been and gone, but there have been some years where they haven't actually raced. So this is the 100th running.
So the 100th running has taken 100 and some years.
Some years, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so we're thinking of going back. So if we do...
With a motorbike?
I'm not sure. It's such a great thing to do, but then you've got a bike in Europe and you've got to get it home somehow. And to ship it backwards and forwards... is a
pain in the
it's a nuisance.
Pain in the back. Just go over there, get one, ride it around, and then flog it.
Yeah. Well, can you do that? I suppose if we've got an English address, we can do that, and I'm sure we'd be able to find one of those.
Well, or go over there, buy a bike, ride it around, and ship it home, and have another motorbike.
Oh, well, you know the best thing about our new house.
How many has he got now?
Six, I think.
Okay.
And the R90S is still being built.
The BMW.
Correct. Mm-hmm. And he has a three-car garage and workshop at the back of the block where we're moving. So he's got
plenty of
room.
It's not really big enough,
is it? There's also a two-car garage attached to the house. So for the first time in years, my car will actually be in a garage.
Oh, well, look, that's a start. It's something you can build on, that one.
Oh, don't say that. He's got plenty of bikes and plenty of room.
Oh, lots of toys. Oh, look, all the very best and good luck with it. It sounds like fun and, you'll be undoubtedly terrorising the people around that neck of the woods at some stage soon. Cat shut inside for 3 weeks.
Oh, thank you. He won't like that very much.
Putting butter on the cat's paws does not work. Just lock it in.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Good luck. And the cat should be the last thing to leave the old house and the first thing to arrive in the new house, if you can juggle that, says former manager in the house removal industry.
Ah, okay. So last thing to go. But we need to put him in a box. We can't let him run around the house or he'll disappear.
And you should have a cat run in the country so that the native animals are not terrorised.
Yeah, we're looking at that.
Yes. And your chat today resonates with us, says Nina from Mitcham. We finished the move from our home of nearly 40 years yesterday.
Oh, how much decluttering.
Settlement is noon today. Lots of memories walking through an empty house, but off for new adventures, says Nina in Mitcham.
Oh, good luck, Nina.
Yeah,
40 years.
The previous owners of my son's house removed all the light globes and plugs. Bath plugs, so my granddaughters couldn't have a bath when they finished moving into the new house.
By candlelight.
We moved into a house with a lovely garden at settlement. Many mature plants had been replaced with natives. Hope Shirley replaces the Angela Taylor Rose and others that she plans to remove with the help of the man getting the cameras. Sounds like they plan to remove a few plants, says Jane in deep. Dean!
Me and my big mouth.
Yes. I asked Siri where the Isle of Manx is and she said, do you want directions to Club X in Bourke Street, says Jess.
That'd be a minx.
Oh, we better get
there.
A wriggle on. Shirley Hardy-Ricks, motorcycling globetrotter, together with her husband, the former Homicide Squad detective Brian Ricks, former president of the Police Association, now many years happily retired. Shirley and Brian have been guests on the program after various adventures, including riding their motorbike from London to Melbourne through Pakistan, also riding across America, also riding across the Road of Bones and Russia from Europe to Vladivostok. There's a couple of books, Two for the Road.
Two for the Road, Circle to Circle, and our new one, The Long Way to Vladivostok.
Oh, okay, there's another one. Shirley is my co-host. You can have a look at their stuff at aussiesoverland.com.au. Shirley and Brian are two of the big promoters and organisers of the Adventure Travel Film Festival, which also brings Bob Hall to our studio. He'll be joining us shortly. But first up in a moment, novelist Christos Tsolkas, together with historian Andrew May, have been in an arts residency. And if you know what that means, good on you, because the rest of us don't. And I'm looking forward to learning when Christos and Andrew come into the studio in just a moment.
On ABC Radio Melbourne.
So many text messages, Shirley Hardy-Ricks. So many people telling you how to make a success of moving house, moving cats, moving plants.
I'm more concerned about moving the cat than anything else. Everything else will look after itself.
Okay. Don't make the cat the last thing to pack, because anxiety of packing, it'll probably run away. People offering you
really
cat carriers.
Advice.
Yes, Christos Tsolkas used to work at the vets. He's here. Here is a vet nurse. Tell us all about it.
Maybe we take him for a sleepover at the cattery just for one night and then pick him up and take him straight to the new house.
That's not a bad idea, actually. That's good. And then you know this stuff. You find a room in the house.
Yep.
And you have the cat there for a few days and then slowly introduce her or him to the rest of the to the house.
Because he's a rescue cat, so we don't know what he's been through before he came to us, other than 6 weeks with a foster home, having been saved from a death row pound. So we don't know how he got to the pound. So.
All our cats have been rescue cats, and that's what we've done when we've moved is.
Okay. And good advice.
It's
Thank
worked.
You. And for those of you at home who aren't interested in cats, sorry.
Yeah. Andrew May is a professor of history at the University of Melbourne. Morning to you, Andrew.
Morning, John.
You got any advice for Shirley about moving a cat?
No, I can't really say I do about cats, but...
We've got another half an hour of this. Shirley Hardy-Ricks, about to move house, is my co-host. Christos Tsiolkos, who used to work before he found the success that he now enjoys as a writer, he used to work in a veterinary surgery as the... what actually did you do?
I was a veterinary nurse assistant. That
veterinary
was my
nurse assistant.
Because I didn't have training before I started the job.
Now, together with Andrew May, they've just completed an arts residency called Melbourne Sings, and I have no idea what you've been doing. What is an arts residency?
An arts residency? What do you think it is, Andrew?
I hope you've got the same idea.
Well, I think this has been a rather experimental process, yeah. I think, which has been the exciting part of it. And Christos, together with Zoe Arley, the photographer, have been working with the City of Melbourne. And I've kind of come on board with a group of my own students, history students, and we've kind of constructed a little creative exercise, choosing a block in the city. For want of a better way to approach it, and we've thought, okay, how can we, if we pin something in the map and say we're going to take a block in the city, what can we explore about its history, its sort of culture, and I guess through creative responses, through photography and creative writing, and also through approaching the kind of heritage of a site. What can we produce by way of an exhibition? So that's where it really began.
Which block?
It's called Block 11, and it's the block that is Swanson Street, Burke Street, Collins Street, Russell Street. So it's kind of the...
Swanston, Burke, Collins, Russell.
Yes, so the one where the town hall is on.
Oh, so it's two blocks. Because there's Little Collins in between.
Well, it's in the original subdivisions back in the 1830s, the block was the big block before. Okay.
Block 11, is that... It was the 11th block laid out in Melbourne, or why?
It was just numbered by the survey.
Okay. If you look at the original maps, which you know, Andy's team kind of, you know, introduced Zoe and I to, it's quite fascinating to see the beginning of the marking of mm-hmm. the city, and yet they were numbered 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. And Block 11 was a great one to begin with, because regardless of where you live in Melbourne or where you live in the state, it's the one that you would know best, apart from maybe the Flinders Street that station area that's got the town hall.
What else is in that block? You've got the town
hall. Well, that was what, you know, John asked what is a residency, and I think people listening would think a residency is really about having a place where you stay and then do your work. But for Zoe and I, Zoe and I have been working together for 17 years on projects, it was just an opportunity to come in and explore the city, and we would meet every week on a Thursday, and we would spend the day, Zoe photographing and me taking notes and discovering a whole range of life that existed in this one block in the city that I had no idea about. We would walk upstairs, we would walk down basements, and people were very generous with their time and with their stories.
Well, you just invite yourself in.
We did. So I discovered, you may know this, guys, but there's this great three generations, maybe four generations now, of wig makers mm-hmm. On Swanson Street upstairs. And we walked in and kind of knocked on the door, and they opened up for us. And as I said, being incredibly generous in terms of telling us the stories, telling us the history of the family. And that happened every single time we came into the city, and kind of informed then the way we approach the storytelling.
So Zoe took the photos.
That's right.
And have you done big screeds on these people, or
because we were working, part of the residency was working with Andy and his colleagues at the history unit at Melbourne Uni. We were very, very conscious that history had to be in what we were producing for this exhibition. You know, looking at the history of what this city called Melbourne. For us, it's always photographs, and she filmed on an 50s camera. So they're actually black and white film, so they look stunning. And they're the contemporary Melbourne. Even though the medium is an old medium, these are the faces of the people who work, live, use the city now. My text goes from the middle of the 19th century to 2016. And what I did was take inspiration from the people I met, take inspiration from the history I was introduced to through the City of Melbourne collection, through the Melbourne Uni work, and then create stories. You know, use my abilities as a fiction writer to tell those stories.
We basically just did a lot of rummaging around.
Yeah.
You know, to be honest, like in historical sources, you know, maps and newspapers and old city directories that would, you know, list every year all the kind of pawnbrokers and drapers and wig makers and
what
so
are those,
on.
What are those directories? The ones that
the Sands
they're beautiful.
McDougall.
Yes. Yeah. Sands McDougall. Yeah. For people who don't understand what they are, explain, because like that exists anymore.
No, it doesn't. It'd be a marvellous resource. From the late 1850s up until, I think, 1974, when they became, you know, bigger, too big to carry, I think, and too big to bind, every year people would go around from Sands and McDougall and knock on the doors, and they would list by street address all the occupants of a street. So you could
look up to see who was at number 714 and who, how long they'd been there and what they did, and likewise at 716.
That's right.
And for family history people, which I've done a little bit of, you can find out who lived next door or worked next door, and that sometimes gives you a clue as to how people met and formed relationships.
Absolutely.
And marriages.
Yeah.
A fabulous piece
and for the social historian too, and the urban historian, you can get a sense of how the city changes. Mm-hmm. So different parts of the city, you know, up around the western end of Bourke Street was a very horsey sort of the horse trades, the saddlers, and
western end of Bourke, down near the station.
Yeah, up the west. So Tattersall's Horse Bazaar and so on. If you
there was a saddlery there until only about 10 or 15
years
ago.
That's right. So yeah. Different parts of the city had different functional zones, if you like. And so look, the block that we've chosen is Town Hall. If you think of Athenaeum, Baptist Church, Scotch Church up on the corner.
George's.
Was
a department store. It's not a person. It was a department store. Yeah.
But a lot of, it's where sort of memory and playfulness comes into this project, and where creativity can sometimes, I think, and imagination can elicit and prompt people's sort of memories of place that are not actually obvious anymore. So, you know, the Royal Mail Hotel, which no one would remember now, on the corner of Bourke and Swanston, on that southeast corner, that was there from, I think, 1848 to 1960 when it was demolished. Like one of the city's leading pubs, you wouldn't know it was there. So,
what did it look like?
It was a grand sort of corner hotel with a marvellous, you know, cast iron veranda and big two story. You know, one of those sort of losses.
That would have been beautiful.
And
John,
what is there now on that corner?
A shop that sells mobile phones.
Beautiful,
I think.
Look, you know, Andy, you mentioned playfulness, and that I think one of the things that was most exciting for us for both Zoe and I was coming into the city and actually being almost tourists. Like I had walked I've grown up in the city, so I have 50 years I have spent walking that block, and it was like I was discovering it anew, and I hope that element of rediscovery and discovery is in the show.
Did you like what you found?
I absolutely loved, you know, John, it's been 2016 in many ways seemed like a terrible year for lots of reasons, kind of in the world, and I think that weekly sojourn with Zoe was a way of getting excited about the city I live in and discovering that I really like the city. I actually, there were really harsh aspects to it, like, you know, no one listening doesn't know about the homelessness that's there, but I also, you know, I discovered that there were so many interesting places in my town and places that I really liked, and I liked the mix.
What was the most interesting or the most startling?
I was, and to actually to do the homelessness is the Baptist Church in the basement. Kind of, we walked up down the alley and discovered a place called Credo that was running for years doing services to people without homes. And it was just a really, can I use the term good-spirited place to walk amongst? And I think for me that was the most, for heart-wise, it was the finest part of the experience.
But
was
most
meeting
people
those
would
people.
Walk you past would, there and
I had
know
walked
there.
Past that part of town 1,000 times, if not 5,000 times, surely, and I had no idea that it was there.
Did you ever feel intimidated walking into some of those places or down some of those laneways?
Oh, it's the other thing that, Zoe and I talked about this, that it's actually, we're really fortunate that it's a city we can do that in. Do you know what I mean? Like, actually, we could walk up any building, knock on the door and feel a sense of trust that at least, and people might say, look, we're busy, go away, but that we could, you know, if...
ring the police, there's a man at the door with some woman with a camera.
But in terms of memory, really quickly, I was thinking what you were saying before, John, I remembered all the cinemas I used to go to as a young boy and a young adolescent in that part of town. There was the Odeon, there was across the road, there was the East End, and suddenly they've all gone. They just exist in my memory, really.
And going back to the old, you know, the Tivoli and the Gaiety Theatre and so on, I mean, the block is a wonderful metaphor of the kind of front and back door of Melbourne, you know, the grand institutional buildings. But just, turn a corner, go down an alley, Rainbow Alley, Royal Lane and so on, and you get a sense of that underside's not the right word, but the other parts of the city that don't immediately kind of jump out at you, but have a long history, and I think connecting to issues of the way we see the city as a kind of a stage of our society and culture, the way we manage. You know, public buildings, public space, the issues of homelessness, these things that people in Melbourne have been dealing with for, well, the City of Melbourne is celebrating its 175th anniversary of incorporation this year. So since 1842, managing the city, both through kind of regulation and bylaw, reflects who we are as a generation. These are not new issues, but the way we respond to issues of what sort of public city we want say a lot about who we are and our values.
The result of this arts residency is an exhibition called Melbourne Sings, curated by Christos Tsiolkos, the photographer Zoe Ali and the historian Andrew May. And Christos and Andrew are our guests in the studio today. Our next guest, Bob Hall, together with some mates, they drive a double-decker bus around the world singing songs along the way. Bob Hall, good morning to you.
Good morning to you.
Still in one piece.
Yes, well, at least the bit's still sort of hanging in there. They're sort of a bit loose.
Tell us about the trip. What inspired a bunch of hippies to get on a double-decker bus in 69, just the other day.
Yeah, just the other day. We were all members of the Young Conservatives at the time, and part of our sort of natural nocturnal behaviour was that we had a local pub that we frequented. And three or four of the guys had musical instruments, and we'd used to have a bit of a sing around there. And once a year, we had a carnival float that we manufactured, and it got crazier each year. Then somebody decided that it was a good idea to perhaps venture abroad. So we bought a Portsmouth Corporation double-decker bus and spent 2 weeks in Barcelona, 10 of us, and had a fabulous time. We got back home. And
so it was the bus kitted out?
Yes, we kitted the bus out, roughly this one. But
a bit then, like Cliff Richard's summer holiday.
It was very, very much like that, but it wasn't so much that that inspired us. It was the fact that there were so many of us that you wouldn't get us in a camper. We did look at maybe a paddle steamer or an aircraft, but no... that was so successful that, and we got itchy feet after that for a few months, so decided that we had to venture further. So we bought another bus from Warrington Corporation, decked that out with the plan of spending a couple of years overseas.
Years?
Years. And decked it out, tried looking for some sort of sponsorship. We ended up contacting several firms to sell their products or try and sell their products in our trebles, which was an oscilloscope trolley, gramophone style Scottish teddy bears, etc., etc. And that was the plan.
Prove to be a very bad salesman, though, didn't you, Bob?
Sorry?
You weren't very good salesman.
We were not very good salesmen. Well, the trouble is we had the opportunity of being sort of in touch with the British consulate wherever we went, and they planned sort of meetings with companies prior to us arriving there. But we were never there long enough to actually conclude any sales. But in the meantime, through our contacts with the consulates, we were able to meet people from consulates, the embassies and so on. With our music that we started to sort of get together, we actually ended up going to parties, and then we got offers to sing at schools and
all the rest of it as well. Very quickly, the route that you took, where did the bus go?
We went all the way through France, Belgium, Germany, Austria, down to Greece, through Turkey, Iran, Pakistan, Afghanistan, India in the end, and then through spent a year in Australia traveling.
So from India to Australia on a ship?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. With the bus was put on the ship. We had to come in advance because we couldn't afford to pay for the bus at the time.
No. So came here, worked, got the bus over on a ship, yep, and got the bus off in which, at what port?
Sydney.
In Sydney.
And then we based ourselves in Mossman in Sydney.
How many hippies can you fit on a double-decker bus?
Well, as many as you can.
Did you gather hippies as you went along?
Oh, we certainly did.
And then drove right round Australia, and then?
Tried to look for sponsors when we were in Australia. First off, we had to go and get jobs. So I started driving buses from Bondi to Sydney. One of the lads went to work for British Leyland and so on. Until Richard started chasing around for sponsors, and we came up with a sponsor from Integrity Paints in Melbourne. And they sponsored us to travel around Australia promoting their paints, singing in hardware stores. And also they organised a few spots on radio and television and so on.
But there's some great footage in the film of them appearing at Roseland Shopping Centre in Sydney. And I remember in the late 60s, early 70s, it was the hot shopping centre. It was the new place. And here they are representing Integrity Paints, all with their bowler hats and the most stylish Union Jack jumpers that you've ever seen. And I was talking to Bob's wife and they're gone.
So after Australia for a while?
We spent year in Australia. We sent Richard over after 6 months to America to find promoters over there for us, because we weren't doing very well in Australia. We were managing to sort of keep afloat financially. But the most important thing was to survive once we got to America. So Richard went ahead, and we paid for him to be over there, travelling around looking for sponsorship over there. And he came up with a contract with the British Travel Authority, which was sponsoring British Rail, Avis Rent-A-Car, Austin Reed Clothing, British Rail, P&O Shipping, and British Air Force Airlines Flying. And
so the double-decker bus goes back on a ship and off to the States.
To San Francisco. We went on to New York and met up with our sponsors there and picked up a camper van, drove from there over to San Francisco, picked up the bus, and then from there on started touring around America.
And it's not so easy touring a double-decker bus.
No, it's not. For one problem was that it was 1947.
The bus was a 1947 model.
So she was an antique that had done, at the time, about 600,000 miles. And the poor old thing was getting tired, so every so often bits fell off or we had to fix various parts up. We took the engine out in Athens because we had a horrible knock on it and fixed that problem. But low bridges were the main problem. We were...
I'm just thinking of driving a double-decker bus in Athens.
Melbourne. No,
you did actually hit five bridges.
Yes, yeah. We certainly did. And one in the middle of Washington, yes.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of Washington, in a snowfall.
Whoops.
Yes. We had to let the tyres down and back it out, and with state troopers everywhere. And
I'm impressed.
Yes, and half the problem travelling around America is that we were over height, so we had to have police escorts everywhere we went, and they're not patient people.
No, no.
They don't understand very old double-decker buses.
No, idiosyncrasies at
the end. And we should explain that the footage is stuff you filmed at the time.
Yes, we were lucky to have been loaned a 16mm camera, and as we travelled around, we much to our annoyance, we had to keep stopping and taking film of wherever we were travelling and so on. But it worked out that the footage was put together by Richard back in England, and it turned out quite a film.
It's a very impressive piece of filming, and it gives you a really good idea of what the roads were like in those days. There's some footage going through Iran on just a quagmire in this bus, slipping and sliding all over the place, driving through snow, and in their stylish bowler hats, singing at Roseland Shopping Centre. And of course, when they became singers, the first person you performed for was the Shah of Iran, which is quite extraordinary.
That's correct. Well, Clive was out one day trying to find bookings for us, and he got this anonymous person come along and say, "Oh, I've got a booking for you. You've got to be at this place at a certain time." So we said, "Well, we don't know what it's about," but we did. And this mysterious vehicle pulled up and said, "Follow me." We went into this compound, and all of a sudden we're surrounded by giant men with machine guns, and said, "Okay." Basically strip, and they pulled our instruments apart and said, "Okay, you're all right," dragged us into this room, into this massive, great big kitchen where there was this banquet laid out, and we had jugglers, belly dancers, God knows what there. And we said, "What the heck's going on?" Said, "Well, we can't say anything." And next minute we rushed into this room in front of the Shah and Shahreen of Iran.
And what did you perform?
That's not actually in the film.
What did you sing?
We sang, I think, about four songs. But they didn't throw us out, and we didn't get shot.
And they did like Whiskey in the Jar.
They were still smiling, so.
I was just thinking, I would love to see the film, because what would strike me about it is just to see those images, because you were travelling at a time when global travel was not common at all. So, I mean, I imagine you were going through places where you may have been the first Europeans.
Well, actually, it's funny you say that, but it's amazing how many people were travelling in those days.
Okay, so it was
We met an English girl that was travelling on a motorcycle from England around the world on her own, a New Zealander on a bicycle. But there were people from all around the world travelling.
And there always are.
Yeah.
And when you think, I mean, both Shirley and I have experienced this also, when you think you are in the weirdest, most remote, most ridiculous place you'll ever be in, and you're just thinking smugly to yourself, "Oh, we're really off the grid here." Yeah. And, you know, two Dutch guys on a bicycle ride past.
Well, that's right.
It happens over and over.
All the time.
But do you think there have been, you know, I was thinking you began with Barcelona. So that's a city that, I mean, it's a beautiful city, but it's such a touristy city now. Did it feel like that then? It must have felt, in my imagination, it feels like it would be a very different city to the one I experience now.
It definitely was. But we went down to a place called Papillon, and we were camped at a campsite on the beach there. It's a lovely little place. And again, multicultural sort of people visiting there. Very spoilt, because we were basically village idiots that played music and drank a lot and fitted in perfectly. But yes, the roads, we travelled through a lot of roads that were very, very hairy, going through Turkey, Afghanistan. We had chains on the front and back of the bus, and we had to keep it running all the time because we were concerned about fuel freezing and so on.
But also you went to places that people can't get through. You drove through the Khyber Pass, which is now closed. Trucks can get through there with permits, but tourists can't.
No. Well, again, at the time, there were a few tourists there. We were lucky. It was a time when it was quite quiet. And we were also lucky because driving down through there, there are some very, very low tunnels. And with a matter of millimetres between the bus and these tunnels going down through there. And the angle of the roads, too, very concerning with being able to sort of keep traction on an icy road.
Well, they load up the trucks in that part of the world so high it's like a double-decker bus. But when you got back to London, a reception at 10 Downing Street, what did the then Prime Minister say to you?
He said, "Don't play for too long, for God's sake." No, he was very impressed. With, very impressed with what we'd done and congratulated us. And being a Conservative Prime Minister, of course,
Ted Heath.
No, it was very good. We were well received, and we'd managed to get the key of New York and being honorary Texans and so on. So.
Great ambassadors for a resurgent. I mean, that was all Carnaby Street, the Beatles, all of that stuff. It was all very exciting, all that era. Did it change your worldview?
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
In what way?
Well, I mean, obviously we were very concerned and frightened about what we were doing and whether we would survive it, but also about the various cultures and the various sort of people that we would meet, how we would fit in. But actually, we had a fabulous time. The people, wherever we were very welcoming and brilliant. And I think the music, to a certain extent, had a lot to do with that. The fact also that we all fitted in well together. We never had many problems internally. And we seemed to sort of exuberate that sort of spirit.
You were living in close confines, 9 of you on the bus. It's pretty crowded upstairs in triple bunks and...
Well, my wife wouldn't agree they're living in circumstances like that, but yeah, we did fit in very well together.
Did you remain friends?
Yes, we did. Yeah. We did. Unfortunately, of the 9 of us, only 4 of us are alive now. The others have passed away over the years.
And did the bus just completely collapse when you
drove? No, the bus is still running. In fact, it was suggested that it be shipped over here for the meeting.
And yeah, it's all about budgets. We couldn't quite bring the bus to Australia for the Bright Film Festival.
It was going to be very expensive. No, it still travels around. It's
Integrity Paint's still
back on the continent several times over the years.
Who owns it now?
We still own it.
Okay.
In fact, we still own the Portsmouth Corporation one as well. It's a bit dilapidated, but it still works.
Well, it's...
Bob will be introducing the film at the festival, John, as will Richard King, who was the salesman of the troupe and went to England, went to America to get all the sponsorships. So they'll actually be introducing the film so you can hear the stories and read the film and then go to the Bright Brewery and have a beer.
Which apparently is what this was all about, Bob, when it boils down to it. Now it's time for you to admit this was all done for beer.
It was all done for a pint of beer, yes.
3 years on the road, all around the world, double-decker bus.
And we got our pint of beer.
For a bet, a wager on a pint of beer.
Yep, and we got it. No, it was mainly because the local publican, where we based ourselves over the years, had this bet that we wouldn't make it. It was never going to happen. He said, "I'll buy it." And he was never noted to being able to give free beer.
Did you get a free beer when you completed your trip, John?
No, there were a few other things. On the, this is Bob, you probably don't even know this, and most people don't care, but Shirley's done any number of extraordinary expeditions. I did one 8 years ago now, where I drove from Melbourne to London with our son, and we had a number of wagers. But the most cutting remark was, in fact, Crackers Keenan saying, "Oh, look, they'll never be seen again. They'll just be a number plate floating down a riverside."
That's a terrible thing.
That's the only thing that'll ever be found.
Everyone told us our marriage wouldn't last.
Yeah. And likewise, you know, which one of you will still be in the car by the time you get to the other end? All that sort of stuff. It's all nonsense, of course. Bob Hall and Shirley Hardy-Ricks at Bright this weekend for the Adventure Travel Film Festival. Christos, Andy, thanks for coming. This has been The Conversation Hour.